Welcome to Luminescence Common Sense Spirituality, a show designed to share spiritual insights with you so that you can comprehend the universe and how it functions. You are about to experience raised consciousness. This is a place where spiritual principles are shared with the goal of assisting you to expand your understanding of both the seen and unseen worlds. Luminescence Common Sense Spirituality helps you to discern the timeless truths handed down from wise sages through the ages from the airy-fairy nonsense that is being taught today. Now, here is your host, Sharon Lynn Wyeth.
Welcome to Luminescence Common Sense Spirituality, the radio show that disseminates esoteric knowledge and common sense spirituality. I'm Sharon Lynn Wyeth, creator of Namology Science, the ability to know all about a person's personality and their soul's purpose simply from your name. Now, the beautiful inspirational music you just heard is called Shine by Dee Lamour, and we always end our program with that beautiful song of hers. And you can hear more of her music by visiting DeeLamour.com. That's DeeLamour.com. And she's also available on all streaming platforms. Now, our topic today is how the universe is set up. How many universes are there? Do they all share the same creator? Or are there different creators, each within their own realm? What are Rakhias and various realms of existence? What are the various kingdoms here on the earth, from the devas to the divine? Who are the Kumaras, and why are they so important? What's the purpose of Gandhi's Hiawatha Council? Where humans fit into this? Where do we fit? What are thoughts and challenges that each kingdom holds? Where do the healing gifts of humans originate? This is a huge topic. You may have not even heard of things like Rakhias or Kumaras before. And so our special guest today is Susan Klopstein to educate us on this. Now, Susan Klopstein is a soul scientist, psychotherapist, spiritual healer, and founder of Soul Wealth, a healing process that begins where psychotherapy leaves off. She graduated summa cum laude with an MA in clinical psychology from the National University in Irvine, California. She's dedicated more than 20 years to developing and mastering her soul wealth healing techniques, which identify the unique spiritual wealth of information, knowledge, and experience of every client. As the former communications and marketing manager for Toshiba America, Susan won awards for her national advertising campaigns and developed the crisis management campaign that handles unfortunate actions and the corresponding press. She managed an annual budget of $9.4 million and oversaw the advertising launch of 15 new products for Toshiba. Along with utilizing her unique healing techniques, Susan uses her business experience to help people with their business plans. Susan, welcome back to Luminescence.
Hello, it is so good to be here. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so lovely. Welcome. And so that everybody knows, Susan, from being on this show as a regular, you know, she's on every 2 months and is my backup should anybody have an emergency at the last minute. She is now being invited to speak on many other radio shows. So you can constantly find Susan all around. All you have to do is Google her. Okay. And so if you want to know how to spell her name, what her website is, all of that stuff, you know, you can always find it on my website, knowthename.com. Just go to the schedule page, click on today's date, and all of her information shows up. So, Susan, I know this is a heavy topic. So, how is the universe set up? Start with how many universes are there?
Oh, gee. This is how many so far I've identified. 12 times 4 is 48, right? Plus 8, 54.
52?
Plus 52, then plus 9.
I'm 61.
61, okay. So that's about how many universes that I've identified so far. And the thing is, I'll start with what people know. What you think you know, right? We'll go from there. Let's start with cosmos, right? Because we think of the cosmos as the sum total of our universe, right? And the universe being all the stars, the planets in our universe. And then the cosmos as being the sum total of our universe plus the Milky Way. even including www.vocabulary.com says it even includes far-off galaxies, right? And Wikipedia says that using the word cosmos rather than universe implies viewing the universe as a complex and ordered system, and the opposite being chaos. So if we think that our universe is organized, it is so extremely organized and beautiful. But we are not the only universe out there. In fact, the world, or the universe, if you will, extends to a point where there are really four universes in Arrakia. Arrakia is a huge volume of space, which include four universes and their star systems. And not all universes have star systems, and some universes have as many as 22 star systems. In addition, all of these Rakia have Milky Ways. And a Milky Way is fascinating because a Milky Way is actually a transmutational system. It's a zone where individuals and planets, a star sometimes, and spaceships move through. It's like going through a metro, okay? And so when we look at that, the beauty of our Milky Way, think of it as like a hollow in the middle, like a metro system, like an underground tunnel. But in this case, it's a tunnel in the sky. Yes? Okay. For a long time when I was astro traveling, I would be going into the Milky Way and see stars around me and then feel lost. I was like, what is this? And it was our Milky Way. And it's a portal, okay? It's a portal. And so if you think about that, what I have identified in terms of over 27 years of doing this work is that there are really 14 Rakias. So, and each of these Rakia, the first 12, have four universes in each one of them, and at least one Milky Way for transit. And then after a number of years, I understood that there was actually a 13th and a 14th Rakia, and the 13th Rakia actually has eight universes, and the 14th Rakia has nine universes. Now, can you even wrap your mind around that and how big
that
is? Yes,
because I'm doing the math. I'm glad you said that some had eight universes or nine universes, because I'm going, okay, this math isn't figuring up until you said that. So I'm a math major. I can't help it. The numbers just fly in front of me. So,
see, you know,
in other
words, it never dawned on me to add them up either, you know. I was just thinking of each having four, and it's only in the past few years that I've realized that we've got a 13th Rakia and then 14th Rakia, and they have eight and nine universes in each of them, right? So these are huge. These are huge. You might even ask, do they have the same creator, right? I don't think so. I don't get that. I get that most of the Rakias until the first through the sixth do. They have our God, if you will. And then the seventh Rakia has Yud Heh Vav Heh, which of course is known as an incredible being in the Jewish faith, correct?
Okay.
Yud Heh Vav Heh. Okay. And it would appear that Elijah is also a major being, as if he is a god of the ninth Rakia. And then, interestingly, when we get to the 14th Rakia, we've got a number of beings, which we know from our cosmos, because they've incarnated, they've actually incarnated here to do some of their work and some of their karmic work here. And that would be Yahweh being one of them, and Vishu, Rama, Siddha, Jezebel, and Imhotep. So these beings have their own responsibility in the 14th Rakia. They just govern a little bit differently. In the 14th Rakia, it would appear that Yahweh governs the first, the second, and the third universe, and Vishu governs the fourth universe. Jezebel appears to govern the fifth universe, and Imhotep governs the sixth and seventh universe. Rama and Siddha govern the eighth and ninth universe, plus the gateway to the 13th Rakia. And
I'd like to just point out two things really quickly.
Yeah.
Just because, again, I'm crazy with math, that if there's 14 Rakias and the first 12 all have 4, okay, that would be 48, and then the next one has 8 and the next one has 9, that's 17 more. That equals 65. So where you say you've identified 61, 65. It's actually more than that. It's 65.
Yeah,
just
65.
So that you know. Okay.
Well, I never added them.
I know.
Okay. I never added them. That never thought, never occurred to me.
Okay, and then it's okay. I just want to be clear because there's other math brains out there that'll be going, wait a minute, these numbers aren't adding up.
I love
okay?
it. Yeah.
And then we have gods of the different universes. However, mm-hmm. is there a creator of all that is that created these gods also, so there is a singular one creator of everything in your understanding?
In my understanding, yeah, a singular, I wouldn't know that it would be a creator of everything, but there is definitely one being that seems to have dominion over all, okay? I don't know that he created all of it because, you know, you've got
given
these
some
other...
of that. He could have given that allowed free will or creation, just like we create, like our creator does. So he would have given that creative authority or power to other beings that we also call gods. Is that it?
I would definitely presume that would be the case. I would not presume he created each and everything. And I think that would fly in the face of our Bible, our Torah, which says that our God created what we have here and our universe and our star system in 7 days. And I want to honor that as well.
So the creator of all that is then would have given creative authority to the God of this universe and our planet, who then would have created this in 7 days. However, the Bible doesn't say 24-hour days, so we don't really know how long a God's day is.
No, we don't.
Okay, so
enough into our 24 hours.
Yeah, exactly. I have figured that out from hints and clues that are in the Bible, which will come out in not my fifth book, because that's the health book coming out in September. It's in the stages now of just getting proofread by my grammar queen. But then the next book is going to go through all of that. And all the clues and putting them all together of where we are and where we're from. Okay, so we're coming back to, so each creator has its own realm, all underneath the heading of the one source of all that is. So, Rakia.
Realm, yep.
Uh-huh.
And that's an interesting thing, if I can follow up on this right now.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people use the concept realm as a large area, an area of existence, correct?
Correct.
And that's one use of the word. But when I think of a realm of existence, I think of life forms that are created, right? And each life form, each type of life form being a realm. And so there are life forms that are created in each Rakia and in each universe. For example, in our Rakia, in our universe, which is actually the fourth universe of the fourth Rakia, I've dealt with 5 realms of existence. And those realms include, you know, aside from deputy gods, the realms of Kimura. And I'll give you some examples. The Dalai Lama is a Kimura. right? Sai Baba is a Kimura. They have a presence here, and they have incredible power. The realm of divine being. For example, Father Time is an incredible divine being. There are the realm of divine beings includes devas, and devas are creators. Think of them as being creators of trees, of plants. We have devas of animal life and devas of computer life, right? And then the archangelic realm, which would be the realm, for example, of Archangel Michael, protector of God, and Archangel Raphael, healer of God. And then the angelic realms. And the angelic realms include most of the human incarnations that are here, but we certainly know people that are fabulous, like Susan, that is a an incarnated angelic of the violet force. And whenever there's a disaster on Earth, she spends hours in a trance state helping a multiple of people cross into the light, right? And we know many very gifted angelics of the green ray who are, there are wonderful hands-on healers, and some of them are Reiki healers and things like that. We know a lot of people that are angelics of the yellow ray that are very gifted teachers. And, you know, we can go on in terms of the various angelic realms, but there are also on this earth the wee people realm, which includes.
Now, we want to know more about the wee people and the hobbits, okay, and the various kingdoms here on earth once we return from our commercial break. Stay tuned.
Your conscious connection to a more mindful world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
Susan Klopstein created an incredible spiritual practice called Soul Wealth that releases blockages from your life. Curses, trauma, karma, old commitments and contracts dissolve. Significant health issues, negative beliefs, unhealthy relationships, and destructive behavioral patterns simply fade away. All of the obstructions that no longer serve you on your life path simply dissipate, making possible a more joyous, fulfilling life. Contact Susan Klopstein at soulwealth.com for a most loving, spiritual soul wealth session.
These are the sounds of a dinner. A dinner that almost didn't happen. A dinner now served, thanks to people like you. Due to COVID-19, 17 million more Americans may face hunger. Feeding America is helping our neighbors in need. And if you're able, you can too. Donations are being accepted at feedingamerica.org/coronavirus. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Feeding America, 200 food banks strong.
Welcome back to Luminescence, Common Sense Spirituality. You're with Sharon Lynn Wyeth, and our special guest today is Susan Klopstein. Now, you can get a hold of Susan through her website, soulwealth.com. Again, that is soulwealth.com. Okay, Susan, right before the break, we were starting to talk about the wee people and dwarfs and those different kingdoms. Please continue.
We were talking about realms, and there were five on Earth. And the next realm would include we people, which include hobbits and elves, dwarfs, gnomes, and merpeople. And then the last one being the fairy realm, which would include fairies, pixies, and sprites. And these were the original realms of Earth that were typically incarnated prior to the flood. They would have been the early inhabitants of the continents of Pangaea, which would have been Africa, South America, India, Austria, Lemuria, which would be the Hawaiian Islands, Fiji Islands in South America, and Atlantis, the Bahamas, Ireland, and Africa. And these would have been the original realms of Earth, which then became disruptive. So when you talk about realms, there's realms of huge realms of space and what inhabits them, and then more directly, the realms of the people that live in those places, the type of life.
So would those five realms that live here on Earth, would you consider those also kingdoms here on Earth? Would that be the same thing?
I hear people say the word kingdom as they relate to them, but truly the real kingdom there to me would be the realm of deputy gods or the realm of the Kimura. For example, if you're looking at a kingdom, you might look at the Dalai Lama and his the kingdom of Tibet. Of Tibet originally, but it is also that the Dalai Lama is committed Kimura to maintain a presence on Earth through eternity until God chooses to dissolve the planet. I mean, that's his contract, right? His
okay,
kingdom.
So I have a question, and I'm sure many listeners have the same question, and that is, how would you define Kimura? What makes a Kimura different than, like, you and I, just a human being?
My understanding is more from the Sanskrit texts on this one, because the Bible doesn't refer to Kimura, but it does refer to beings of old, right? And I love the statement, beings of old, because it really relates to the first 600 beings that were created, and some people say it's the first 300 beings that were created. I see it as more as the first 600.
And, so is that like Sanat Kimura, the what they call the ancient one?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Or even Jesus, Sananda Kimura, and he is the first that was created through Funsetting on Earth, right? So he is known as the first of God's begotten sons, but he's Kimura. He's a deputy god level of Kimura. Yeah.
Okay. So let's explain the difference between a Kimura, a regular human being, and a deputy god. So the Kimuras are the first ones created, and there's about 600. So that just means they were human.
I would imagine deputy gods were the first, might have been the first created, and they may have been created out of the one creator. It's hard to understand at that level. But I believe then you have the Kimuras, the second tier, if you will, which would be the first 600 beings that would have been created. And what is interesting is the only one of those first 600 that incarnates on Earth is Jesus. He seems to be. And Moses, right, Ketumi Kimura, he incarnated as Moses once and as Ketumi Kimura is another time, yes?
Okay, so that brings another question to mind, and that is, okay.
It's confusing, isn't it?
Well, that's why we're going to straighten this out. So at the beginning of every age, we have somebody that comes and is the teacher of the age. So Jesus was the teacher of the past Piscean age. So Moses was the teacher of his age. Don't they also get special names when they're the teacher of the age?
Well, they probably would. That was probably why Jesus was never called Sanat Kimura, or Sananda Kimura, rather. Sorry.
Have a name? I think there's a name for that position. that when they come to be the teacher of the age, and it's just, you know, if you can't think of it, don't worry about it. I'm not thinking of it either. That's why I'm asking. But I believe that they have a name. There's a position when they're the teacher of that age, you know, and that every age gets its teacher, just like Moses was one and Jesus was one. You know, and that every teacher has more knowledge than the one before because they're bringing us through a whole nother age. I'll think about it as we're talking.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. I think that you're absolutely right. And, of course, Jesus is renowned for bringing through the Christ consciousness, if you will, and the ability of the being to release that which was in which would be incongruent with the higher divine spirit of the self and integrate all souls of self into the higher divine spirit. Right?
Yes. And my understanding is that oneness or that Christ consciousness that he brought through is actually the fourth level of consciousness, which is a whole nother show. So we're not going to go there. So when we go through those levels of consciousness. Okay. So, So continuing with this, what is a role of a Kimura that's different than the role of, say, us human beings? How would they differ other than being first created or created prior to us?
Well, I think every Kimura brings through a whole new way of being in the world, a whole new way of being. You know, when Jesus came, people did not know that it was possible to raise from the dead. They didn't know or didn't presume that our lives were eternal, that our spirits were eternal. They didn't understand the magnitude of sin. What was sin? What was not? They did not.
You know, that brings up an interesting.
I don't think they knew what conscious living was, and I think that the Bible, especially in the four Gospels, really walks through what is conscious living.
Okay, so you bring up sin, and so we're just going to take a slight detour, a short one. I've always thought of the sin as anything that takes you away from God or moving away from God. And to not have sins, that means you're moving toward God. Is that too simplified of a view?
This is a different opinion that I have, but I believe that all sins are actually survival mechanisms. It is only when we hurt ourselves or others, when we create debts of omission or commission to ourselves or others, that we're actually engaging in a sin. For example, if we did not have lust, we would not procreate. If we did not procreate, we would not create our race of being, right? It's only when we lust for what is unrealistic, you know, what is someone else's husband or wife, what is outside of a committed relationship hurting the partner, that it becomes sinful, right? If we did not have pride, we would never identify our gifts and talents and expend what we need to expend in terms of time, energy, and money to develop them and then exchange them for monies as well as love and approval in our environment.
Right? Okay, so we're really saying... Yeah, so we're really saying the same thing because you're giving specifics where I gave a generality because I believe not keeping any of those commandments, that's moving us away from God because we're going in the wrong direction versus towards
right.
God. So,
well, you know, there's some interesting examples that are really examples of other beings from other Rakia in our Bible, in our universe that is actually noted in the Bible, which I feel is fascinating because it takes us right back to the topic of Rakia. And if you look at the book of Genesis, for example, the in the Bible, God is angry with the Nubium, and they're from the third Rakia. They're a much more advanced civilization, and he's angry at them for begetting children on earth with women. And he disdained them for the use of beings on earth.
Okay,
the book,
is that what mm-hmm. they called in Genesis, where it says the small gods, the gods saw the women and saw that they were fine, and that was that mating?
There are a few different places where they speak of that. It's not just the Nubium. I'm trying to think of what other civilizations came down here. But yeah, essentially. And there are two reasons why he would have disdained other civilizations, the Nubium and some others that came down. And firstly, because they were, you know, having sex with earth beings. Secondly, is because they were shape-shifting other beings. They were interjecting, whether it's through intercourse or whether it was through surgery, their DNA as an abuse of earth beings to shape-shift them. And it was particularly abusive to the beings that were we people and the fairy realms of earth, because it shape-shifted them into human form. And this was highly offensive to Source. And the flood served to wipe out all the realms of earth other than, you know, the avatars, the divine beings, the devas, and the angelic realms. So all these wonderful realms, the wee people realm and the fairy realm, that we used to have are gone now. But they were, God was furious at the shape-shifting. So you've got two different times that God attacked, if you will. One in the flood, and secondly in Sodom and Gomorrah. Yes, for grievous sin, which caused harm to volumes of people.
Okay, so when you're Nubians, could that be the same thing from Nibiru? So is that who you're referring to when you say Nubians, Nibirubians? I'm just trying to clarify. Is that the same from what?
I don't know exactly what planet, because I define them as from a different Rakia. They would be from the third Rakia.
Okay. Thank you.
There are other, you know, there are other things, other planets, other people that came to Earth. And this is kind of a fun thing to look at, because this is the reality of Earth, you know? The most important issue in this discussion of Rakia is this is the fourth Rakia. This universe, the fourth universe in this fourth Rakia, is designated as a karmic universe. It is a place where all life forms capable of shape-shifting into human form can come, learn, clear debts of omission and commission, and heal miscellaneous Akashic records, and they can heal their physical issues, their relationship issues, their work, their career, their mission issues, their housing issues, their financial issues, their exchange issues, their community issues. Our world is a place of healing and growth and transformation, which is the critical attraction of our world from all Rakias at this time. And this brings us to the second reality. The ETs are here. Many beings on Earth are actually incarnated ETs whose souls did not even originate on Earth. And it gives us that rich, wide variety of creation that we so enjoy. Yes?
Yeah, that's just amazing. Keep going.
Yeah. So here we have the Arcturians. Are on Earth. They are. They tend to be of the purple, the silver, the green ray. They're from the third Rakia. They can be fifth and sixth dimensional beings. In other words, they are beings that are divine in concept, and then they express concept. They have very high levels of mental development. They're powerful people. They're balanced. They're mental. Is balanced with their manifestations. Their feminine is balanced with their masculine. They're people that love freedom and value the individual and see individual potential. They facilitate individual transformations. They're our high priests, our mystics, our mentors, our coaches, our priests who have churches with like counseling office and 12-step programs and angel studies. They're yukis, they're yogis, they're very, very powerful, wondrous people. And we have Nephilim that are also here. They bring the gold and the magenta ray, and they're extremely, extremely mental. And their realm, they're from the 10th Rakia, and they bring through, this is what you were saying, essentially, many of them were in their early incarnations on Earth, gods who came down to Earth, and they're okay. In many ways the ones that were that God was angry because they multiplied with daughters on Earth, right?
Yeah.
But they're known. Oh, the phrase that you were saying is they were quote the heroes of old, men of renown. And another interpretation is they are the quote giants unquote, people of great size and strength. And the Hebrew word means the fallen ones. And in God's eyes, they were sinners or fallen ones, ripe for judgment because they took advantage of earth beings.
Are those the same ones that are now called the Watchers, or is that a different group?
I wonder if, I don't get the Nephilim are Watchers. Are they Watchers? I don't get that. I'm wondering if the Anakites were Watchers, because that's another group that are said to be giants. And they are a group that they intend to evoke fear. They evoke fear. And in Matthew, 24:25, quote, for false Christs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and miracles and deceive even the elect. So I think that it's the Anakites which tend to be more fear-provoking.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of this is fascinating. We have more to cover. We want to know about Gandhi's Hiawatha Council, how humans fit into everything, and we will be right back after this commercial break to find out. Stay tuned.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Mark Twain said the two most important days in your life are the day you were born and the day you find out why. The why is hidden in your name. Sharon Lynn Wyeth has created a scientific way of deciphering your name to reveal your contract for this lifetime. And your name even specifies the seven areas that are subsets of your soul's overall goal. Your name identifies who you are to both yourself and others. What does your name say about you? Contact Sharon Lynn Wyeth at info@knowthename.com for your stunning name review.
The United States has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. At the Equal Justice Initiative, we believe mass incarceration has to end. there is this presumption of dangerousness and guilt that gets assigned to Black and brown people. We have to confront our history of racial injustice and commit to a new era of truth. There's something better waiting for us, something that feels more like freedom. Truth can inspire change. Please learn more at EJI.org.
Welcome back to Luminescence, Common Sense, Spirituality. You are with Sharon Lynn Wyeth, and our special guest today is Susan Klopstein, and we are talking about how this universe was created and the different realms and rakias within the universe. So, Susan, you have mentioned on different times Gandhi's Hiawatha Council. What is that? How does that serve us? You know, for those people that have never heard of that, what it would be advantage for them to know about this council?
Well, you know, as I said, one of the stunningly wonderful things about this world is it's a world where people, where beings can come and incarnate and work through issues that they have incurred, debts of omission or commission, acts of things that they've done to hurt themselves or others, right? And sometimes we know that some people are not, they're not of the light. They're not of the light. When they are beginning to recognize that they want to become a member of the light, they can move through a council called the Hiawatha Council, which is run by Gandhi. And I've seen the Hiawatha Council many times. It's whenever I see them, I know that I'm dealing with someone who is what I call cresting darkness into light. Now, there are some karmas that people are going to do some time separated from source. If you're killing people, if you're stealing from elderly, people that have no recourses, if you're doing hellacious acts, that is someone that at some point in time is going to be put away from God. Whether you call it hell or eternal damnation, whatever you call it, there's going to be a distancing. And there has to be, because God is light and he is love. And at some point, he says, that's enough. So when people are put away from him, they must do some karmic work. And when they are ready to come back into the light, that karma comes under a different jurisdiction, and that jurisdiction is the Hiawatha Council. And the Hiawatha Council will guide people in those fine karmic issues and Akashic records that allow them to be brought into consciousness and light. It is literally a process very overseen by Gandhi and the people that work with him.
So when people pass to what I call the Great Beyond, it's really just a different level of consciousness, but they can volunteer to work with this council?
I don't know that you volunteer. I think that you finally do enough work that you're accepted into the supervision of that council. This is a council of judgment with the Akashic Records Council working with them, as well as a council of mentorship. You know, they want people to succeed. But there are times where they will say to me, they'll literally hold a hand in front of my face and say, stop. This person will not be healing instantly. They will do two more years of this karma. And that's not going to be put aside. And that's the overseeing of Hiawatha Council. For whatever reason, you know, they have judgments.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how do they interact with the karmic board?
Sometimes they mitigate some of the karma that is assigned to someone, and we know that mitigation as grace, yes. Sometimes where they have forgiveness, right, and then they'll bring them into the light and give them an assignment that will help them change their way of thinking in the world, change their way of interfacing in the world to be more gentle and easy in their interface. Other times, they have what I would call an easement of a karma. In other words, you will not have the use of this leg for a period of time. but you will also get to work as a nurse or a doctor or a this or that. And in so doing, you will model strength and overcoming, and you will learn that you will overcome. So this is what I would call mercy. Yes?
Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they oversee that.
Okay. So where do the healing gifts of humans actually originate? Do they originate in this Rakia? Do they originate outside of this? Do they originate on the earth, off the earth? Do you know where our gifts originate?
Do you mean the gift just of healing, or do you mean any of the gifts and talents? So far I've identified 3 relational types and 15 different communication types and 77 different functional gifts.
No, that's a whole nother show, Susan.
It definitely is.
I just want to know.
I can identify a lot of gifts and talents. I love working with high schoolers and college age for that reason, and people that feel lost. But, our gifts and talents really come from the color bands that define who we are as individuals. Those color bands are actually aspects of God. And each individual has a very large color band that identifies the angelic realm that they're from, or a combination of 2 or 3. But then they have a little bit of color from other bands that identify, oh, they've got a little communication gift here, they've got a little healing gift here, they've got a little bit of a numbers gift there. Is that what you mean? Those gifts actually come from the aspects of God and His personality. There are 12 aspects of God, actually. And so that's where those gifts come from. And each individual is very different.
Yes, it most definitely is. But that's what I was looking for, those 12 aspects of God. So
yeah,
if you were going to say what the gifts and the challenges of each kingdom holds, or various, you know, each of these realms that are on earth that are currently here, not the ones that were destroyed during the flood, what would you say would be the gifts and the challenges? And while you're thinking about that for a minute, I just want to remind everybody that you can get a hold of Susan. She does incredible work as a medical intuitive, and with the knowledge that she shares with each individual, and it comes very quickly to her. And you can get a hold of her on her website at soulwealth.com. It's soulwealth.com. Okay, gifts and challenges, fairly briefly.
Each gift is actually has a shadow side, a shadow aspect. And sometimes those shadow aspects are the ways that people learn, right? So if you're looking at a child, for example, who is a little engineer, they're going to go around the house and they're going to stick a knife in the sockets of the house because, gee, this is really interesting. They're going to... if you've got a little builder, you might look in your back porch and see that somehow he's hammered about 100 nails all over the back porch. You know what I mean?
right. You got to find a more positive outlet.
Obviously, I had boys, right? You know? And the thing is that on the one hand, you go, oh my gosh, blah, 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 but these are really shadow aspects of their greatest gifts and talents coming out, right? Do you remember the day I called you in an absolute, we were on the phone and one of my twins ran in and said, I'm so mad at Trevor, he won't play with me. And he's got that fight. He's got the plumber's fire wand. No, he's a technical kid, right? It fascinated him, the welding tool that the plumber had on his truck. And he just picked it up and lit it. No problem.
Only there is a problem.
Exactly. So it's understanding sometimes when you look at people and some of the stories of their youth, all of a sudden it clicks. Oh my goodness, this is a little engineer. Oh my goodness, this is a little computer engineer. You know, this is a little, this is a natural therapist. This is a little kid that just, oh my God, Mom, I've got a new friend. And you're going, oh my God, you know, this person has not had a bath in a year. And yet they don't see that because their ability to affiliate and relate is so powerful. It's such a gift in them that they don't see any disqualifying factors. It wouldn't occur to them. And so these are the gifts and the ways sometimes you identify a great gift. It's not through the expression of the great gift, but through the expression of the shadow aspect of that great gift. Yes?
Okay, so now we've got a topic for another show, is shadow aspects. I'm taking notes here because we all want to know about that too. I'll tell you, our time always goes so fast, Susan, when you're here, and I so appreciate all the information that you share with all of us. I think that's so valuable. Again, if you would like to get a hold of Susan, her website is soulwealth.com. And I wish to be able to say what next week's show is. And thank you so much, Susan, for being here on this week's show. Next week is Pat Robertson Rice, and our topic is dreams. What do dreams tell us? How important are dreams? Can we utilize dreams to gain information? Anyway, our questions are all going to be about dreams next week with Pat Robertson Rice. This is your host, Sharon Lynn Wyeth. And I want to thank you again for joining us. It's always a pleasure that you take your time to come and listen to us as we discuss spiritual topics that you probably won't hear on other radio shows. So this is Sharon signing off.
And all that she knew, and all.